Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week podcast.
As long as we're treading blasphemous territory with Fat Sonic, should Fat Sonic have a girlfriend, a human girlfriend?
Yes. He's dating Peach.
Oh.
We got to go full blasphemy on this one.
I don't think Peach would settle for Fat Sonic.
She's got to think for Bowser, clearly.
I have a suspicion. I should not Google Sonic and Peach. I bet it exists.
Oh, it has to.
Yeah, I guarantee it exists, but I'm not doing that. I want to sleep tonight.
Nothing on the internet is obscure, right?
Oh, you are following me. Sweet.
Yep.
You already found me. Nice.
I did. In fact, I found your Twitter account, which apparently you said to that you do not have the password for anymore.
I do have it. I have a Gaming Memories Twitter. I think you do.
Yeah.
I think I did have one. Yeah. Yep. I need to get on that. I was hip to the talk, but I am not hip on the tweets. All right. Do you want me to start recording?
Yep. That would be great.
Are you guys PC players? That way you have that PC tag at the end?
Podcasts instead of, yeah.
I'm so stupid. Oh my God.
No, Donnie's a PC player.
Yes.
Maybe that's why it's there.
I never even realized podcasts initials are PC. Wow. All right. Here we are. I'm ready.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the Gamers Week podcast, or should I say the Heavens to Betsy podcast.
Inside patron joke.
Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in video game industry. This is episode 26. Today is Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. And I have with me my awesome host who believes that the perfect Sunday includes pizza and whiskey before noon. Blue Williams. Blue, how you doing today?
Is that not the perfect Sunday? Surely nobody can disagree with me there.
You know, it's nice because you kind of get things out of the way, right? And then you can get that like afternoon nap in. Life is good, right?
Yeah. And not one thing to complain about.
There you go. Well, Donnie is out this week. He is buying some Bubble Bobble fanny packs for our burlesque Gamers Week fashion show, which is going to be a solo man show. He's going to do it all by himself. It's very tasteful. But that means that we have a guest host tonight. Cade Call from the Gaming Memories podcast is joining us tonight. Cade, how are you doing tonight?
My body is ready. I am ready.
Yes. Nice. This is going to be a good episode. I can feel it.
So, Cade, tell us a little bit about who you are and your podcast.
I run a podcast called Gaming Memories Podcast. The gig, the shtick, the joke is I am the one true gaming prophet, Miyamoto the Father, coaching me the Son, and Carmack, the Holy Ghost,
Amen.
Appeared to me in vision and said, all the other podcasts, no offense, this is their words, not mine, are abominations. And I am to make the best video game podcast. And all I had to do was interview creative and interesting people about their favorite gaming memories growing up. So that's exactly what I do. I invite people on who I find interesting, musicians, artists, digital artists, game developers, composers, TV producers, collectors, other podcasters, et cetera, streamers, cosplayers, usually some connection to video games, but oftentimes not. I have a lot of musicians on. I did like try to be a rock star for a good decade of my life, did a record label. So I just know a lot of musicians. Mm-hmm. And I get to know them by starting out, just asking what games they played growing up. And then we usually promo their stuff. And it's a real loose format. I never know what's going to happen. Sometimes we talk about games the whole time, and sometimes we talk about games for 5 minutes and we go off rails and talk about, I'm a sucker for aliens. That's one of my favorite topics. So
awesome.
That happens for sure.
Love it. Well, we're super glad to have you on the podcast, man. So thank you so much.
Yes. And we'll have links to all of Kate's stuff in the show notes. So when you're done listening here, be sure to go on over and check out his show.
All right, so why don't we jump into our reviews, reactions, and requests. So first from Mr. Skiffo, this podcast is actually good. I listened for a bit, and I'm definitely going to continue. We appreciate it, Mr. Skiffo. Snes's Life says, I hope they do the rest of the Resident Evil series in VR. RE4 on the Oculus is fantastic.
Can confirm. It's awesome.
Right. I just don't know if I can handle that. All right, next up from 90s Collector, I stand by Monopoly. It's true that Kelly Slater does deserve better, though. Also, there needs to be a lot more love for the GBA installments of Tony Hawk Pro Skater. So, so good. I've actually never played a GBA version of Tony Hawk.
I have Pro Skater 1 and 2, I think, on GBA.
Any good? Does it live up to kind of the
not
the
as good as the regular? You know, not bad for the day. Not bad for a handheld.
Is it like Donkey Kong Country on Game Boy?
Kinda.
Okay, got it. Just like a watered down version of it.
Yeah. But, I mean, what are you going to do? It's a Game Boy.
All right, so why don't we jump into our poll for the week?
All right, and now it's time for the very important poll. That was my attempt at a robot. You're welcome.
It was fantastic. Great job. I was convinced, though.
Okay, good. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP. That is our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question this week was, what is the funniest villain in video games? Coming in at third place, Handsome Jack with 19.9% of the votes. Dr. Robotnik and Eggman at 24.2% of the votes. And the winner was GLaDOS with 38.5% of the votes. We also had 17.4% of people vote other. So let's look at some of their comments. At A Beer and a Game said, Salazar from Resident Evil 4 was a treasure, and I agree. At Retrovid Gaming says, it has to be the Clog from the epic game The Neverhood. At Ants Maybe Cool says, the narrator from Stanley Parable, true. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At Drinking in Japan says, Murray, the demonic talking skull from The Curse of Monkey Island. And at C. Holland Art says, is it too soon to say Tommy Tallarico?
Well played. Well played.
Yeah. I don't know if it's too soon, but that's still pretty funny. So, Kate, since you're our guest tonight, who do you think is the funniest villain in video games?
I definitely think Handsome Jack is more funny than GLaDOS. Although GLaDOS is funny. I'm really surprised by that. You guys shared this result with me earlier before we got on the podcast, and I was surprised then, and I'm still surprised now. I would laughed at least like 3 times more consistently. Now, I would say that Borderlands 2 is a lot longer, so maybe that might be messing with sort of how I'm remembering it.
Right.
Yeah, because Portal's way shorter, so you'd have to do like laughs per minute, like a per capita calculation. I still think Handsome Jack would win, man. He just chimes in with these one-liners, and maybe they're not as gut belly laughing, but they're so it's like Deadpool. There's a joke every 30 seconds, right. And even if half of them don't land, you're still laughing every minute. So I don't know. I would have to say it's maybe, if I'm being fair, maybe it's a different type of humor.
It's true.
Like GLaDOS hits you with those, like, it's funny, but also existential crisis lines. Right. So, yeah.
Nice. So, what did you vote for, Ryan?
I voted for GLaDOS, and I'm going to stick with this one. I posted, though, in their purple tentacle from Day of the Tentacle. But I was thinking back on this, and yes, Purple Tentacle is funny, but he doesn't have a whole lot of lines and stuff that would make him the funniest. I think visually he's funny. The idea of a tentacle that sucks down toxic waste and then, you know, grows some T-Rex arms, that's pretty funny in itself. But I think GLaDOS kind of hits it in my sense, at least my sense of humor, right? So she calls you, hey, testing just came through and it came back that you're a horrible person. We didn't even test for that. You know, ouch, burn. You know, everything that GLaDOS says is this, you know, terrible burn against you, right? She calls you garbage. She calls you fat at certain times. So at the point of making me laugh at myself, because obviously it's a computer that wants me to fail, I think GLaDOS kind of hits both of those categories really well for me.
Nice.
Yep. Blue, what about you?
So I had to go with Monokuma from the Danganronpa series. Mm-hmm. He is this evil little teddy bear who makes students play in death games and murder each other.
Wait, what game is this?
Danganronpa.
I've never heard of that.
Oh, I'll send you a leak later. It's, I don't know what kind of genre you describe it as, but basically you have to figure out who has done the murdering.
Like mystery detective game?
Yeah, mystery detective game. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But so all the students are stuck in a school and they won't be allowed out unless they can successfully murder somebody without getting caught. And the one running the game is this evil little teddy bear who has this funny little laugh and is just so sadistic and enjoys torturing the kids. And he has lines like, it doesn't matter how depressing something is. If you throw in a laugh my ass off in there, suddenly it's bright and happy. So
I don't know how I've ever heard of this game. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's like a Agatha Christie Murder on the Orient Express kind of thing inside a school with an evil teddy bear.
It sounds like Squid Games, but it's you murder people instead of the games. Like you're trying to get out by murdering people, like escape by killing other people, right?
Yep.
I love it.
If Teddy Ruxpin was
right, a Teddy demon Ruxpin from hell. Has to be the inspiration for Monokuma.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and shout out our patrons this week. We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. Jim and Colleen, Games with Coffee, Davey PGH, the Red Ox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Thanks, Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rye Bread's secret best friend, Mega Retro Man, Gametroid, Emo-esque, Bill Tucker, Ryebread's number one fan, Fruitcake's number one stan, The Wizard of Zardoz, Clayman 71, Great Saiyan Man 81, BNT Zilla Guy, Geek With That, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Terry Kinnear, and Ducks in Disguise. Yes, our patrons like to make fun of me specifically with their names.
Isn't that touching? It's very sweet.
It is very sweet. Yep. So if you like what you hear today, and we really hope that you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more. All right, so why don't we jump into our headlines for the week?
All right, but before we do that, our headline segment is, of course, proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic, family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Currently, they're playing through Top Gun and Super Zaxxon. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes.
Fitting for Top Gun. Have either of you seen the movie, by the way?
I have.
That's right. That's right. We were talking about that on cut. Kay, what about you?
Loved it. It's a Taylor Swift blockbuster pop song. Nothing special, but it follows the formula and it does it well. And I loved it.
I agree with everything that he said. That is an accurate assessment of the movie.
Blue just pulled out the ditto. Yep. Nice. All right, so first off from VGC, Sonic Frontiers won't be delayed as a result of fan feedback, insists Sonic's team boss. There are no plans to delay Sonic Frontiers following its recent gameplay reveals. Sonic Team studio head Takashi Iizuka has told VGC The hashtag delay Sonic Frontiers was briefly trending on Twitter earlier this month after many Sonic's fans took to social media platforms to vent their disappointment over the first video showing the game in action. It's not really that surprising, Izuka said. We do realize everyone is just kind of reacting to the video that they just saw, and because they don't understand what this new gameplay is, they're kind of comparing it to other games that they already know. However, Izuka claimed that this wasn't an issue because the development team are happy with the game as it stands. Frontiers is in development now, and actually we've been doing a lot of playtesting with our target audience. From our playtesting results, we have been iterating, we have been listening to the comments that come back, and we've been getting a lot of great feedback from people who rate the game and are like, I had a lot of fun playing this game. I'd give it an 80 or 90 point score out of 100. So we do feel that we are getting to the point where this game is done and people will like it. And we do not want to get to, or we do not, and we do want to get the game into our fans' hands as soon as possible.
So there's been almost universal negative reaction to the gameplay reveal of this, but it's not a problem because people don't understand the game. That's not a problem. I guess.
I did hear another interview on another article. I wish I could. I'm trying to remember the source. I can't remember it, but it was like IGN or Kotaku. Look, someone, I'm assuming it's legit. I don't know how much fake news is in video game news, but just in case, disclaimer, I don't remember where it came from. But the same producer said that the place we saw is like a world map that's playable. But it's not as dense as, like when you're playing a JRPG, you have like a world map, you can walk around, but really just click on a location, it loads a new world. And so it's not, he was implying that it's not really open world. It's just that the world map is open world.
It's open zone is open what they're trying to call it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like that's kind of like, it did look empty, but if that's not indicative of the density of the actual levels, then maybe I'm less worried, but it...
I guess, but why show us that then?
Yeah, exactly. Why not show us the cooler stuff?
Right. It's interesting that they're just brushing off all this concern from Sonic fans. And I suppose if you go back and consider the Sonic movie, maybe people are just kind of bored of Sonic fans being up in arms about not liking things and demanding changes. But if people already don't like your gameplay reveal and don't understand the game, that's not the audience's fault. That's your fault. Right. Explain it to us then, like we're five, if we don't understand that this is a brand new type of gameplay and it's not open world, it's open zone, and you're doing all these amazing things. Great. People will buy into it. Just tell us.
The point of a marketing video is to get people hyped for the game. So if people don't understand it, that's your fault for not creating a marketing video that helps them understand why they should be hyped for it. It's a really weird response. Like it's not me, it's you.
Exactly.
We're the ones you want to buy the game, so
it's like Kojima and Death Stranding.
Right.
You just don't get it.
Yeah. He's right. I didn't get it.
Yeah, you cannot blaspheme against the sun, Kojima. No, I agree. Death Stranding is just, I just pretend it doesn't exist. It's
fair.
I'm in denial.
That's fair.
I wonder if this is setting a precedent for them though, because I think that because of the Sonic movie and all the changes that were made as a result of fan feedback, maybe he's setting the stage being like, hey, listen, we're not going to do the same thing. And I just wanted to let you know early.
Yeah, that could be it. But what I saw from those two gameplay videos did not make me excited in the least. So I must be in that group that just doesn't get it. And until they show me something that makes me get it, I'm still not behind this game.
All right, am I up?
You are up, sir.
All right. I've never done a read before. This is the first time. So, from Motor Authority, Gran Turismo video game to spawn a movie. I did see this. That's a little weird, but let's go for it. The Gran Turismo video game series will spawn a movie scheduled for August 11th, 2023. According to a tweet from the Game Awards Video Game Awards show, the plot will center on a teenage Gran Turismo player who becomes a real-world professional racing driver, according to the tweet. Neil Blomkamp has also allegedly been tapped to direct the movie. His previous credits include the science fiction film District 9, Elysium, and Chappie. He's also known to be a bit of a car person and directed an installment of the BMW Films short film series, so he should be a good fit for directing racing action. Gran Turismo is considered the gold standard for realism in racing games thanks to its meticulously rendered cars and tracks. That has generally taken priority over plot, but hopefully it does mean we will get some quality racing scenes on the silver screen. This won't be the first racing game to become a movie. A Need for Speed film was released in 2014, but was widely panned. Mm-hmm. That hasn't stopped corporations from trying to turn any and all car-related intellectual property into movies. Even Hot Wheels is slated to get a movie, although a release date has not been announced.
That Need for Speed, that was a flaming dumpster fire.
I didn't even know about it.
It was so bad. It was so bad. And I love the Need for Speed games. Well, up to a point.
I need to watch it. I didn't even know it existed. So and I learned that.
Don't save yourself.
Is it? Can it be so bad it's good in an ironic way? Or just bad?
Maybe. I wasn't amused at all. I thought it was just 100% bad, but...
I saw this headline, and the first thing I thought, well, they're just making a racing movie and trying to piggyback off the Gran Turismo brand, because there's not really a, like you said in this blurb, there's no really plot to any of the Gran Turismo games, other than, I guess, you're taking, like, you're pretending like you're climbing the ranks in the league and getting better cars and getting credits, so... Mm-hmm.
Standard racing game stuff.
Yeah, I guess. So cool. We're going to get a racing movie that's called Gran Turismo. Sweet.
Yeah, but this plot will center on a teenage Gran Turismo player who becomes a real world professional racing driver.
Ooh, that's a little... Because I was so focused on reading it that I wasn't really comprehending it. That's pretty terrible.
That sounds so bad.
Wow. To be fair, I do have a couple homies that they don't race Gran Turismo, but they do race iRacing with like a whole rig. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those guys that are really good at iRacing do get recruited as long as they're like the right physicality. You can't be like 250 pounds even if you're really good. You just weigh too much. So I know iRacing... teams do recruit from like the top 1% on that simulator. So you could argue like that might be a plausible scenario, but not Gran Turismo.
No. And the fact that they've specified teenager.
Yes.
That has me concerned as well.
But for some reason, I'm okay with every JRPG featuring a teenager.
Right.
That's a genre staple. It's different.
I guess. Yeah.
I guess if this has anything going for it at all, it would be that Neil Blomkamp is directing. He's done some legit movies, but there's only so much you can do if the script is garbage.
Well, at least you can avoid that whole it's not canon thing that you're going to get from most every other IP that's out there that's trying to become a movie from a video game.
I don't think Hot Wheels is canon.
That's true. You never know, right? I mean, Hot Wheels has been around for a while.
Right.
Yay, I guess.
No.
I would say...
A very sarcastic yay.
If I had to predict as the gaming prophet, it's not going to be good.
I don't think it takes a lot of foresight to...
Hey, those are my favorite predictions. That's why I'm always right. I'm inspired.
All right, next up from Nintendo Life, random, don't expect to see Sonic kissing any more humans, says Sega. Thank you, Sega. During a recent interview with Axios, the head of Sonic Team, Takashi Iizuka, laid down a few rules regarding the creation of games featuring Sega's mascot Sonic. The first two are relatively self-explanatory and serve as the official rules. Number one, Sonic needs to display a strong sense of speed. And number two, Sonic doesn't have the ability to swim. Indeed, Iizuka went so far as to point out that Sonic requires the use of a flotation device during swimming events in the likes of Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games Tokyo 2020. If it's canon, it's canon.
Right.
The third rule is more of an unofficial addition, courtesy of Iizuka, but is perhaps an important one for the reputation of the franchise. Sonic will no longer be kissing any human characters, probably. Iizuka simply said, I don't think we'll be doing that again, when discussing the infamous scene in 2006's Sonic the Hedgehog between Sonic himself and the human character Princess Elise III. So there you go. We probably won't be seeing Sonic kiss any human characters from this moment on. Having said that, a quick search on the internet will likely demonstrate that folks have a keen fondness for such a concept.
Who are these people?
Well, we have both at one point accidentally Googled Sonic fan art, and there's some things in there.
Some unsee things that can't be unseen, unfortunately. Yes.
So, you know, there's a side of that fandom that probably likes that stuff very much.
Devastated. They are absolutely devastated.
Yeah. But for the rest of us, like that scene in 06 was just like the cherry on the horrible, horrible sundae.
Oh, so awkward.
Did either of you play that game? I never played that, Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
Was it good?
I haven't played to the point of getting to kiss Princess Elise, though. I played through enough of it to understand that the game itself, it's really poorly done, and the mechanics and controls are kind of awful, and it's a strange setup, honestly.
Was it maybe that you didn't understand it? Maybe.
Well, it's a Sonic game, so apparently you can get away with
it. Get on Sonic's level, dude. You just don't get it.
For real.
I'm just envisioning, though, this like strong sense of speed. If they broke that rule, it would be like the fat Thor is fat Sonic. I think the world deserves a fat Sonic game. Just waddling, you know?
Right.
They should allow like some King of the Hill or Beavis the Butthead writer to envision like, you know, like down in the dumps, giving up, let himself go Sonic. And then he's got to get himself back in shape for something. Robotnik's back. I don't know. That'd be pretty funny.
The plot of the new Invader Zim movie, basically.
There you go. And then, you know, he's got to go swimming to work out. So he's got like one of those, you know, lifeguard tubes around there with the arm swimmies and stuff. And, mm-hmm. Oh, we need this. Azuka, let's break the rule just once. Just for us.
So instead of hashtag delay Sonic Frontiers will be hashtag give us fat Sonic.
Yes. Let's start that tomorrow. So, it'll be trending by the weekend.
As long as we're treading blasphemous territory with Fat Sonic, should Fat Sonic have a girlfriend, a human girlfriend?
Yes. He's dating Peach.
Oh.
We got to go full blasphemy on this one.
I don't think Peach would settle for Fat Sonic.
She's got to think for Bowser, clearly.
I have a suspicion I should not Google Sonic and Peach. I bet it exists.
Oh, it has to.
Yeah, I guarantee it exists, but I'm not doing that. I want to sleep tonight.
Nothing on the internet is obscure, right? All right, so why don't we jump into our top three new releases for the week? The first one is Lumberjack. Platform is Xbox Series X, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Grab your axe and save the environment by chopping and recycling every man-made thing in your path and solving puzzles with your charming animal friends. Neon White. The platform is Switch and PC. Neon White is a lightning-fast first-person action game about exterminating demons in heaven. You are White, an assassin handpicked from hell to compete with other demon slayers for a chance to live permanently in heaven. The other assassins seem familiar, though. Did you know them in a past life? And the coup de grace for the week, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge is finally here. PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge features groundbreaking gameplay rooted in timeless classic brawling mechanics. Brought to you by the beat-em-up experts at Dotemu.
Yeah, Dotemu.
Yeah.
I say .emu, but I don't know if that's right.
Okay. Experts at Dotemu or .emu, who made Streets of Rage 4 and Tribute Games. Bash your way through a gorgeous pixel art environment and slay tons of hellacious enemies with your favorite turtle, each with its own skill and moves, making each run unique. So taking a look at these three, Blue, I'm going to ask you which one excites you the most.
Oh, definitely Shredder's Revenge. I pre-ordered the physical from Limited Run Games, which is great. But now I got to wait, like, I don't know, 6 months to play it. Because I'm not going to. Yeah, if I'm lucky, I'm not going to buy it twice. So that's a bummer, because I know when this drops tomorrow, everybody's going to be playing it and it's co-op. So everybody's going to be like, hey, come play with us. I'll be like, no, that's okay. You guys go ahead.
It's like Silk Song for me.
Except for you could give a rat's ass about Silk Song, and I actually want to play.
Nice. Cade, what about you?
Definitely Turtles. It's my birthday tomorrow.
Happy birthday. Well, that's quite a birthday present.
Yeah, I grew up hardcore Turtles head. I got all the old school toys. Yeah, it's landing on my birthday. It's paying homage to the Turtles of my childhood, the style of my childhood, the cartoon of my childhood. It's a sign, dude. I will be playing it all day tomorrow, and I'll probably message you, Blue, and rub it in your face, because why would you not buy it twice? Why would you suffer? But I get it.
When I have my physical copy in my hand, then I'll message you and rub it in your face.
That's fair enough. It does look cool as hell.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
What about you, Ryan? Like, we really have to ask.
Right. Turtles as well, obviously. Always been a huge fan of the Turtles arcade games. Been a huge fan of Turtles in Time. It's probably one of my favorite Super Nintendo games of all time. And the fact that this was made by the folks who did Streets of Rage 4 tells me that the gameplay, the controls, and everything like that, and even the artwork is fantastic, or it will be. So I cannot wait. I'm in the same boat, though, as Blue right now. I have a decision to make, because I did buy as well the classic edition from Limited Run Games. So I have that lovely 6-month wait period as well. Mm-hmm. I think I might buy it digital too, though, just to play. Because so the one thing I envision as well is this is a game that I can play with both my brother and my nephew online, because it's up to 6 folks you can play online, which is super cool, by the way.
Yeah, that's
unique. Looking at some of the gameplay footage, it looks really crazy when six people are
overwhelming out. Looking.
Yes, absolutely. So I wonder if that affects the gameplay, but we'll see. I really hope that you can't hit each other.
Oh, no. If you friendly can, fire. There's no chance. You're doomed.
Right.
Do either of you have Game Pass?
I do not, no.
Well, it is on Game Pass day one. So for those listening. Yeah,
some of the patrons in the Discord were bragging about that.
Yeah, but you could sign up for like a month, Blue. Or you know what you do? Okay, this is what you do. You buy an Xbox.
That's step one, right.
All right. You sign up for Game Pass.
They're not hard to find. It's okay.
You get like a month free, right? Or something when you buy an Xbox One. You get like the first month of Game Pass for like $3 or something like that.
I think he's right on that. So what you do is you sign up for that. You play it for 13 days straight. Then you return it. Right? So it's in that 14-day waiting period.
Yeah. And then you stick at your case later. Yeah.
Right. Right. You got your fix. You're all set to go. And then you know what to expect when the real thing comes.
You guys have put a lot of thought into this. So yeah, it looks like a clean sweep for Shredder's Revenge.
For sure.
To be fair, Lumberjack and Neon White look like fun, unique games, but just bad luck to be releasing this week.
Right.
Very.
All right. So before we jump into our main topic, we did want to let you guys know that Gamers Week is giving away a brand new copy of Switch Sports. So to enter, look for @RetroGameBrews pinned tweet on Friday morning and comment with a picture or screenshot of you listening to episode 26. And we will be accepting entries from Friday, June 17th, all the way to Tuesday, June 21st. So you're already listening to the episode, so you might as well enter now before you forget. Now, this month's game is being provided by our newest sponsor, JNL Games. Visit jnlgames.com, where all pre-sales are discounted off MSRP, $10 for $60 titles, and $5 off anything below $40. All right, so why don't we go ahead and jump into our main topic.
Main topic is from PCGamer.com, every game at not E3 2022. There's technically no E3 this year, but you'd be forgiven for thinking otherwise. Over the course of a few days, Sony announced that Spider-Man is coming to PC, Street Fighter 6 was revealed, Bethesda gave us our first proper look at Starfield, and exciting games like The Invincible were shown at the PC Gaming Show. In this article, we've collected all the big names that got trailers and announcements during this reveal. Heavy, late spring, not actually E3 part of the year. However, there's too much for us to cover in just this episode, so we're going to hit the highlights of each event.
All right, let's start off with the best of Summer Game Fest. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the sequel to Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2019, not Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2007, just so we're all clear. We saw the reveal trailer and then a longer gameplay trailer at the Summer Game Fest, and the game releases October 28th. Marvel's Midnight Suns is a tactics RPG from the same team that brought us XCOM Enemy Unknown and XCOM 2, in which we befriend and command various Marvel heroes to cancel the end of the world with turn-based combat, and that releases October 7. Cuphead, the delicious last course. We got a new gameplay trailer for the DLC for Cuphead, the platformer about the tragedy of having a cup for a head, and that releases June 30.
Aliens Dark Descent, a new squad-based action Aliens game from Focus Entertainment and Tindalos Interactive, releasing 2023. Goat Simulator 3, the sequel to Goat Simulator 2, which was a non-existent sequel to Goat Simulator, releasing fall 2022. And Metal Hellsinger, a rhythm shooter set to metal. It also has a demo on Steam, releasing September 15th.
Alrighty, Layers of Fear, the next horror game from Bloober Team, a quote, a new game built upon the foundations of Layers of Fear, Layers of Fear Inheritance, and Layers of Fear 2, end quote. It was announced, and we had to accept that Layers of Fear is actually its name, releasing soon. Okay. Gotham Knights, an open world action game in which Batman is dead, releasing October 25th. And lastly, The Last of Us Part 1, pun intended, a remake is in the works using the motion capture from the original actors. Aside from the big news that The Last of Us will eventually be on PC, we heard a little more about the multiplayer spinoff that's also in the works.
So taking a look at this, what stood out to you most? Blue, why don't we start with you?
One thing that was interesting is how much screen time they gave this freaking Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2.
Right, right.
That was like, I don't know, like a quarter of the whole freaking show. And it's funny because I was cycling through all the different Discords that I'm part of, and in every single Discord, people were complaining about how much time was being devoted to Call of Duty and how boring it looked. So I didn't see one single person be excited about it. It's a shame Dottie's not here to give his opinion, because he's the one who would actually matter. But I thought it was interesting that I didn't see a single person in favor of it. Mm-hmm. But as far as me, another big disappointment was Layers of Fear, the next horror game from Bloober Team, because it's been rumored forever that Bloober Team was working on Silent Hill. And that is right. Decidedly not Silent Hill.
Didn't they say it starts with an S and ends with an L?
No, that's Blue Box.
Oh, gotcha. So
Bloober Team was another one.
Blue Box.
Yeah. There's so many Silent Hill rumors going around, and I just want one of them to be true.
Right.
But this apparently was not. It looked kind of interesting, though. I may still play it, but I really wish it was Silent Hill.
Nice. Cade, what about you? What sticks out?
I wanted to piggyback on the Silent Hill Layers of Fear. For me, the reason why I named Kojima the Sun is I think particularly the PT playable teaser and announcement of Silent Hills is one of the greatest marketing moves of all time. And it's juxtaposed by one of the worst cancellations and like PR mumbo jumbo of Kojima leaving Konami. It's just such a weird, and I think it's created more jonesing for Silent Hill than it had it never been announced in the first place, because it's like we got excited, it was coming and it looked really good, and then it was taken away from us. And I think that's why Silent Hill rumors are just everywhere, because we want it really bad. And I had heard more the, was it Bluebeam or Blue Book rumors?
Blue Box.
Yes, Blue Box, excuse me. Then this Bloober Team. But I had seen a few headlines here and there that there was another team potentially working on a Silent Hill game. So that kind of bums me out. I didn't realize that until you were reading it. I'm like, oh yeah. And then I got bummed out. So thanks for that.
Misery loves company.
The as far as Call of Duty goes, the only thing I would say to that is I think Call of Duty's main audience are people who are not hanging out in gaming discords for the most part.
Probably.
I just think it's like a completely, I think there's like a schism in the gaming world, like those who play Call of Duty and those who don't. And there's enough people who do that I guess it justifies like taking all the time up and sort of alienating the other half of the gaming community, which I think is
right at the
growing.
Beginning of the show.
Yes. And I would argue the collective whole that doesn't play of Call of Duty, even though they don't singularly focus on one game like Call of Duty players do, there's more people who don't play it that are probably viewing the event than people who do. I do think that's a weird decision, and they should have thought that through. The only other thing I wanted to say is it wasn't talked about in the Summer Games Fest, but it does have a new demo out on Steam. I am a avid addict of Metroidvanias. Any sort of clone of Castlevania Symphony of the Night, I will play mm-hmm. till the day I die. Mm-hmm. And there's a new one called Moonscars that just mm-hmm. barely got a demo on Steam. And if you like pixel art and Metroidvanias, it's a free demo. You should check it out.
I think Blue just had this moment.
Yeah, I have to go. Well, you guys can get the rest of the show, right?
Blue, can you splice in from Step Brothers? Did we just become best friends?
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Right. Well, I freaking love Metroidvania platformers. Those are my favorite. And pixel art.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
It's like the one formula that I just don't get sick of. I can play it over and over again.
Yeah, I'll definitely check out that demo. Thanks for sharing.
Yes. Moonscars. It's awesome.
Moonscars. Writing that down. What did you think, Ryan? What were your impressions of Summer Game Fest?
So I'll echo what you guys said about Call of Duty and Layers of Fear. Even though I was at first kind of intrigued by Call of Duty, it was just like, all right, land the plane. When's this going to be over? When's this going to be over? But it was interesting. I thought that some of the physics of it were really cool as well. But the two that stood out for me was, one, I'm a huge fan of the movie Aliens. I always have been. Everything after Alien 3 doesn't exist, in my opinion. But right, Alien, Aliens, and Alien 3 can be fun to watch as a popcorn movie. Right?
What about Prometheus?
Prometheus is good. I will say, I enjoyed Prometheus.
Prometheus made zero sense.
It is an extremely confusing movie. I will agree with that. But Aliens and Alien are two of my favorite movies of all time. And if I'm looking for something that's real action heavy, Aliens is absolutely it. And the fact that it's kind of, I don't know, it's this squad-based action game was kind of cool, where it reminded me a lot of kind of, I don't know, not to say StarCraft necessarily, but kind of like StarCraft, where you're leading a team of people, kind of manipulating them and trying to take on the aliens. So I think I would definitely be interested in something like that for sure. The other one was Metal Hellsinger. I like the idea.
That one looks interesting. I mean, right. I don't like shooters, but if I did, that
right.
A rhythm-based shooter, I don't think is something I've ever seen before.
So you've got to be strategic on when and where you shoot to match up with the music, which is got to be like a whole immersive experience, I think. Where you know, a lot of times when you're playing a game, the music's in the background and you're not always paying a lot of attention to it. This one, you kind of have to. And it just so happens to be a genre of music that I happen to like. So if it was like a country one of this, probably not. Right?
What would you be shooting at in like a country?
Possums or something. I don't know. No, it's Deliverance the game. Oh, I didn't want to go there.
Oh, no. All the jokes I could think of, I'm like, yeah, I can't say that. Right.
But this definitely looked interesting. I mean, not unexpected for me as well, because I was not aware of this whatsoever. So the concept is actually pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. Overall, the actual Summer Game Fest event was kind of a letdown, because it started with Call of Duty, like we said already. So if you're not into Call of Duty, that was a boring, like, I don't know, 20 minutes, something like that. Ended by announcing the remake of Last of Us Part 1. And The Last of Us Part 1 multiplayer, but that stuff had already leaked. Right. So it's like, yeah, we knew that. It came in with a whimper and then also went out with a whimper.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, let's move on to Devolver Digital's showcase, which aired on Thursday, and you can watch the whole stream on YouTube. It is goofy as usual, but there are some games too. Here are two of them we think look particularly cool. Skate Story is a skateboarding game in which you're a demon. Your goal is to skate to the moon and swallow it, releasing in 2023. And Cult of the Lamb, an action roguelike about an adorable but vengeful lamb amassing a cult to defeat the gods that wanted to kill it, releasing August 11th. I actually think Cult of the Lamb looks super fun.
I agree. I think that having a lamb as well is a great change for like a sword swinging epic fighter to make it a lamb. There's also a little bit of romance in there. There's a lamb kissing a pig. Lambs and pigs living together, mass hysteria.
Wow.
Boycott Cult of the Lamb.
I guess that sounds about right for Devolver Digital.
I love everything about cults. I think they're fascinating. So I missed this, which is interesting because I like Devolver. I generally check out their stuff. I missed this completely. I'm going to have to go watch it. I love the premise.
Yeah, the fun of Devolver Digital showcases is the showcase itself and the games are kind of secondary.
For sure. This year, Epic Games hosted its own showcase. You can catch the entire live stream over YouTube, yet another under the Summer Games Fest umbrella. Here are the highlights of what Epic brought over the week. Lord of the Rings, Return to Moria, a co-op crafting sandbox set in the fourth age of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings setting, sending the dwarves down to carve beneath the mountains, releasing in 2023, and Disney Speedstorm, Mario Kart, but stuffed full of many characters Disney now owns, including Mulan, Captain Jack Sparrow, and Sully from Monsters, Inc., releasing in 2022.
Well, we know which one you would prefer.
Yeah, man, I'm really looking for Disney Speedstorm. As the resident Tolkien dork on our crew, I am so down for this. So one of the things that, if you read the books, it's Moria and in the entire setting, Tolkien does a pretty good job of describing it, but still it's a place that you would love to visit just to kind of be there. Movies did a good job representing them, but again, it's a movie, so you kind of, it cuts in between there. So being able to explore the vast different tunnels and sections and parts of Khazad Dûm is just a dream. And the thing is too, like the art style isn't photorealistic, and I'm completely okay with that. It's a fantasy based thing, so by all means. And the fact that you get to build, you're harvesting things, it's completely up my alley. I cannot wait for this.
What do you think, Cade?
I feel nothing for these games. I like Lord of the Rings. I just co-op crafting sandbox. I'm not never really played like a crafting heavy game. I never played that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. That sounds like Stardew Valley type game.
Except it's in 3D.
Okay. And it's Lord of the Rings theme and world. Yeah.
Yep.
I do like the lore. So oftentimes for games like that, I'd probably just read about all the lore and the cool stuff in it without having to play it. Right. Disney Speedstorm, I'd rather just play Mario Kart. I don't know.
Right.
Right. Disney Speedstorm looks like a freaking nightmare. It's got the same problem as every Mario Kart clone in that it's really, really obviously a Mario Kart clone. It doesn't appear to be trying to doing anything on its own. And it's free to play. But then they've got all these characters and all these carts, and you know it is going to be so full of microtransactions. It's everything I hate about free-to-play games and everything I hate about Disney stuffed into one game in a genre that I like very much. I'm offended by this game.
I love that you're offended by this game.
I just want to let that simmer that she's offended.
Yeah, I know my pain brings you joy.
All righty. Microsoft and Bethesda are back for their second joint showcase following Microsoft's 2021 acquisition of the game publisher. Together, they own so many game studios, they could fill the show solely with first-party stuff. The first game that they showed, or first game on this list, I should say, is Redfall, the very Left 4 Dead-like co-op. I should insert who the devs have vehemently said it's not Left 4 Dead. End quote, vampire shooter from Bethesda, delayed to 2023.
That carries about as much weight as the Sonic dev saying, no, it's not Breath of the Wild. Okay, but it looks like Breath of the Wild.
I'm stoked for this one. One of my favorite Metroidvanias of all time, the sequel, Hollow Knight Silksong.
All Hollow, yeah! We got Silksong!
Whew, I thought the game, I was getting worried about it, honestly. It's been forever. We got new gameplay trailer for the sequel to the action platformer that everyone has not so patiently been waiting for, releasing sometime in the next 12 months.
Freaking good enough for me. Next up is Overwatch 2, the sequel slash major update to Blizzard's hero shooter you definitely know and maybe love. PvP launches in early access on October 4th. Flintlock: The Siege of Dawn, a combat-heavy action RPG where gods and humanity fight with swords and guns, releasing in 2023. Minecraft Legends, the rumored Minecraft real-time strategy spinoff in which you'll be saving the overworld from the invading piglins and their nether corruption, releasing in 2023.
Is nether corruption an innuendo?
I thought that as I read it and I was like, nope.
All right, Diablo 4. Blizzard has been talking about Diablo 4 on a pretty regular basis already, but this Necromancer class reveal is new, as is the confirmation that it is planning to launch in 2023. And lastly, Starfield. At last, Todd brought us the Starfield gameplay. It sure looks like Skyrim in space, which is what we expected. Hell, there's even space lockpicking. In today's packed gameplay reveal, we learned about character creation, customizable spaceships, ship flight, and how we'll be exploring 1,000 planets. So, Blue, why don't we just rip that Band-Aid off and you tell us what you're most excited for?
Well, one thing I will say is that, freaking heck, Microsoft knows how to put on a showcase. You remember E3 last year, and they were the stars of E3 last year, and they came out swinging again today, and they're showcase blew everything that had come before completely out of the water. Even Jeff Keighley's precious Summer Games Fest was nothing compared to what Xbox had lined up. They just put game after game after game, and what we've covered here is only a tiny fraction of it. So if you're into games and for some reason didn't watch it live, it's well worth your time to go back and watch the whole thing. But yes, freaking Hollow Knight made my whole week to hear that Silksong. It'd been so long since we heard anything. I mean, like Cade said, I was like, is this ever going to come out? Or is it just going to disappear into the ether? And Team Cherry like closed up shop and didn't tell anybody. Like the last update on their Twitter account was something like 2 or 3 years ago. It was not looking good. And then we got a gameplay trailer. We got a confirmation that it's releasing sometime in the next year. That's huge. And if you have Game Pass, it's going to drop day one on Game Pass. Woo!
Thank you.
Yeah.
Love it. I'm epic. So stoked.
Epic, epic.
So, Kate, tell us why you're stoked.
Well, Hollow Knight's a given. We've already talked about that. But even though there are things that concern me before the reveal and after the reveal, I can't help but be pumped for Starfield. The Mass Effect trilogy, even though it has all its warts and all its flaws, is still one of my favorite gaming experiences. I love space. I'm a nerd for aliens. And although, even though it's just like No Man's Sky with a more realistic art style and maybe some extra stuff, I'm down for it. There are a few things that make me a little worried. The frame rate in the presentation was really bad. And Bethesda games aren't known for being the most optimized games in the beginning. And
right.
PCs had, I'm a PC, primarily PC player. And there's been a lot of games that have been pretty bad, big games that have been really badly optimized on PC day one. And it is getting a little frustrating. Elden Ring was bad. Cyberpunk obviously was really bad. Mm-hmm. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So I didn't love that it wasn't running super smooth. And these gameplay reveals, these trailer reveals, they're heavily doctored and they have people playing them a certain way and they're certain builds or they cut certain things. And the fact that it still looked choppy on that makes me worried for the game as a whole, but we still got a long way before they put it all together. They say it's playable to start to finish and it's all just refinement and polishing time from here on out. If that's the case, then maybe we'll be okay. And lastly, the 1,000 planets are procedural and there's only 4 cities in the game. So it makes me think a lot like Mass Effect. Yeah, there was like 400 and something planets, but most of them, all you did was like shoot a drone, get some resources, and you moved on. Mm-hmm. So like what? Like you're going to have a whole planet that's procedurally generated like No Man's Sky, and there'll be like some random stuff I can pick up. And is that even going to give me better gear? Like what Is there any incentive to exploring that outside of just the sake of exploring and anything? After Elden Ring having like the most handcrafted, bespoke, open world, deep map that I think they changed the game in that regard. Mm-hmm. I don't know how excited I am to explore like procedurally generated flat wastelands with just items scattered about, but they might be able to pull it off. I'm still pumped.
Yeah. I mean, what they're trying to undertake, I'm giving what they showed in the showcase. And that's a massive job that they had have ahead of them. And it's already been delayed. I don't know how many times.
Right.
And I would not be surprised to see it delayed further.
Yes.
Agreed. Completely agree.
I would hope they would. Like if it really needs to be delayed, I'd rather just wait. The only team that I've seen really gain forgiveness from the community, unironically, is No Man's Sky. Right. One of the worst launches, but they've really turned it around. But it took 5 years, 6 years. Right. So I don't know. I think it'll be delayed, and I think they know that. I think it's going to be good, but maybe not up to the hype that's built for it. But it's still going to be good.
Which is, of course, the most dangerous thing about these types of games.
Yes.
When they are so overhyped.
Kind of did it to themselves, though, a bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Cyberpunk did it to themselves as well.
Right. Very true. Very true.
So what about you, Ryan?
Redfall looks awesome. I'm really excited for Redfall.
I didn't know you're really into shooters.
You know, lately, I've been kind of getting back into it. I mean, I used to be a huge Halo fan back in the day, so... As far as things go, it's not a genre that's foreign to me, but Redfall looks awesome in the sense that it's the vampires, not the sparkly ones, but like legitimately scary vampires. And Blue, you've had me watch what, like 15 different scary movies, horror movies lately. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to get into this whole like immersive horror experience.
Yes, I have converted him. Yes, this is my greatest achievement.
You know, I feel like I'm giving you too much credit now.
Considering how much you hated horror movies before, I'm taking this win.
I'm enjoying them. Actually, the movie that we watched on the Patreon movie night, Werewolves Within, I was very, very impressed with that movie. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm. So you're not even going to mention Diablo 4?
So I was watching the trailer for Diablo 4 because I missed this. I missed absolutely every single one of these. So today I watched everything that you see here. Mm-hmm. But Diablo 4, I'm watching it, and the outside is thundering and lightning out and raining really, really hard. And right in the middle of it, my power goes out. But it took me a second to realize what was going on. And I was like, wow, this is really immersive.
How'd they do that?
Right. Damn, this is good, man. But I mean, obviously a huge fan of Diablo too. So this was a cool look into it. Necromancer class, I kind of expected. So no surprises there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, excited.
It's so conflicting because the trailer that they showed there looked good. But then I know that if I played it, it'd be full of all the nonsense that modern Blizzard stuffs into their games.
Indeed.
The microtransactions, you have to have an account, you have to do this and that. Gotta have the internet connection. No, I just want to play the damn game.
Just play Diablo 2 instead.
Right.
All right, so before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. Gaming History 101 is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game shows, and more. Here is this week's trivia question. What set this, in capitals, this Atari system apart from its contemporaries? Well, the membrane keyboard. Of course, it was awful.
That sounds horrifying.
And I knew this one right away because they are 100% correct. A membrane keyboard in general sucks, so I don't like it. No, sure, I don't like it. So originally when Tim said it to me, it was this Atari console was apart from its contemporaries. And I was like, I don't know if this is technically a console. It was
redacted,
which was a mini PC for Atari. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yes, it played games, but its main function was like an actual computer. So we changed the system. But yeah, good luck if you don't know what the answer is. But tune into the Leadist podcast this Wednesday to hear what that answer is going to be. And you can find the Leadist on your favorite podcast platform. We also have links in the show notes. All right, thank you for coming, students. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrand's Gaming History 101. In today's lesson, we're going to discuss the early history of one of the most influential software companies that pioneered a genre that is still extremely popular today. We, of course, are talking about id Software, which, as I remember, is one of the three... John Romero is one of your three people that you worship. Yeah. Kate, is that right?
I was stalking your Instagram profile. I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. I was putting faces to names, and I think I've got you all figured out. So repeat that question for me, please.
Sure. So as I understand, Mr. Romero is one of your patron saints from your profiting.
Well,
days,
he's,
if you will.
I mean, Carmack is the Holy Ghost.
Carmack.
In the good gaming gospel, but. Romero's like John the Baptist. So he's not in the Godhead, but he's a big name. He's an OG.
Love it. So to kind of begin our story about id Software, let's start off with talking about the company SoftDisk with John Romero. Like long before he was the icon that he is today, he was a young programmer who kind of had a passion for making games for the PC. So John's passions actually started, which is interesting. Enough. He got the chance to learn BASIC at the age of 11. He went to his local college computer lab and started asking students who were in there how to code, and they helped him out and taught him how to do it. He would write it down in his notebook on all the different things that he would have to do in order to code for BASIC, and fell in love with coding ever since then. Now, if we fast forward to when he was working at SoftDisk, he would make both games and utility programs for that company. So at the end of the day, though, John really, he wanted to make games full time. Finally, he went to his boss and said, hey, listen, let's make just a games division here at SoftDisk. And his boss said, sure, do it. Greenlighted the project. And John ended up hiring in John Carmack, Adrian Carmack, which they are not related, by the way. And also brought in another programmer from SoftDisk known as Tim Hall, who also had a passion for games. So, if we're looking through the lens of today, we often think of PC games being considerably more advanced than console games. You know, better graphics, smoother frame rates, better sound than their console counterparts. But if we go to the mid to late 80s, consoles were doing video games much better. And the reason, again, is that they were dedicated game systems, so all their processing power went into playing games. And also, there were, at the time, trying to make it so that computers were much more affordable to the average person. So the processing power coming out of computers that were pre-builds just weren't that great. So the one thing that PCs weren't able to do at the time was side-scrolling, like, say, a Nintendo could do, where the character moved continuously on the screen, and then the area in front of them would kind of move with them rather than it just being one solid room, and then they would transition in between rooms. So side scrollers were also at that time too kind of dominating the marketplace. So that was something that Romero really wanted to do. And working with John Carmack, who is a genius. He absolutely 100% is a genius when it comes to creating engines for games. He actually ended up figuring out that if you didn't paint the whole screen, every frame, but just the things that were moving on the screen, you could actually save considerable processing power. And this actually led to them prototyping a game called Dangerous Dave in Copyright Infringement. Where Carmack and Hall actually ended up staying up all night to kind of program and create a homebrew of one of their favorite games on console, which was Mario 3, which happened to include, instead of Mario, a character that Romero had made in the past called Dangerous Dave, hence Dangerous Dave in Copyright Infringement. So next day, they put the disc on Romero's desk, didn't tell him anything about it, and he plugged it in, started playing it, and was floored by the fact that it scrolled along with you. It was a legitimate side scroller. And that kind of put Romero in a position where he was like, we really need to make a port of Super Mario Brothers 3 for the PC, which they did. They did a pixel by pixel port. There's nothing different from the PC version versus the Nintendo version. They did it perfectly.
Was that officially released?
It's not. So they submitted it to Nintendo with the hopes that Nintendo would license it. And Nintendo was like, yeah, no. That's the game that helps sell our consoles. So we don't want this on any other version or any other platform. So at the end of the day, they put all this work into kind of creating this and nothing came out of it. But
you can't possibly be surprised at that.
Well, and it was, I think that them not getting the game was probably a good thing because they said, all right, you know what? We want to make our own game then. If we can't make Super Mario Brothers 3 for the PC, let's do something else. Now, enter in kind of our next character into the story, which is a gentleman by the name of Scott Miller. He was the owner of computer games company Apogee, which if anybody's a fan of Duke Nukem, they probably know Apogee very well. Now, Scott wanted to make games that everyone could enjoy, and one day he ended up stumbling across a game that was created by John Romero, which was an Egypt-themed game. It was similar. It was a PC game, so it was like one screen each, and while it was good, Scott absolutely was impressed by what Romero was able to do kind of on that screen. So he ended up sending him a bunch of fan letters. Now, to kind of tell you why he sent them fan letters and not just reached out and said, hey, I want to poach you from this company. At the time, a lot of software companies were pretty paranoid about poaching. So he pretended to be a fan of Romero's games in order to try to create an avenue to talk with them. So he would send in a letter under, you know, an assumed name and then would include his address and phone number at the bottom. Sent him, I think it was 3 or 4 of these fan letters, trying to get Romero to reach out to him. The unfortunate thing is Romero never replied until one day Romero was reading a magazine that was profiling Scott Miller and he recognized the address at the bottom. He went, whoa, I've seen this address before. So pouring back through the letters that he had gotten, he saw that each one of the letters had the same exact address and the same exact contact information. So he knew what was going on. He kind of discovered that. And very annoyed, he ended up sending a letter back to Scott Miller saying that he was pretty angry at being lied to. But interestingly enough, he included his contact information down at the bottom. So, of course, Scott took the opportunity to call Romero and started this relationship that they had together. So at the end, I guess it all kind of worked out. No guts, no glory, right?
Whatever it takes.
Right. So after creating Super Mario Brothers 3, Romero is thinking it's probably a good time for his team to kind of branch out and start their own company with the new discovery that they had created, you know, with the engine that John Carmack put together. So they reached out to Miller to partner with Apogee to say, hey, we would like to release games with you guys. So the crew had actually been working at the time at a side scroller called Commander Keen. And what they were doing is they were programming it after hours using the computers from soft disk. They would bring them home, code it, and bring them back in the morning.
Oh, what a pain.
Right. But also kind of like a little shady. And they told Miller, look, we're familiar with the internet. What we can do is we can make two versions of this game. One that's free, that's a trial that can be sent out to the internet. And then when players get far enough, it would include instructions on how to purchase the rest of the game for, you know, $60 or whatever it was. Now, Miller was kind of all in with that. He was like, yeah, sure, let's do this. The four of them were like, all right, let's start a new company. And for a while, they had a previous name that they had been kind of working under, thinking that it was going to be a good choice for them called Ideas from the Deep. And that was just too long, they thought. So they shortened it to ID. Now, they chose ID as well for two other reasons. So for one, it could be the abbreviation for In Demand, but also it was the pleasure-seeking part of the brain. So all good things when it comes to gaming stuff. they thought it would be kind of like the perfect set for it. Now, with Commander King, when they released it, the game blew up as far as internet sales are concerned. So Keen made in the first 10 days $30,000 for Apogee, which was almost 5 times the amount that Apogee was making on average in a month. Apogee was making like $7,000 a month. Yeah. And in 10 days, they made $30,000, with Commander King. Now, all of a sudden, they're getting successful, right? Now, they programmed this game all on soft disk computers. So to avoid getting sued, they went to them and said, hey, we'll still create games for soft disk. And they made an arrangement where they would develop games for $5,000 a pop. Not exactly a huge amount of money, but it's enough to kind of keep the lights going and allowing them to continue, you know, with their projects. So for their next big game, the team was actually influenced by a widely popular game called Wing Commander. I'm sure you guys have probably heard of that one.
I love Wing Commander.
Indeed. And it was a, you know, a 3D first person perspective in which you were in a ship. You actually, your hand would move along with it. So it looked like you were kind of moving the joystick or what have you. So it was kind of this cool perspective, right? So wanting to make a 3D game for themselves, they ended up creating a game called Hover Tank 3D for soft disk, where players traversed a maze in a tank, kind of rescuing citizens and fighting monsters that was way smoother and faster than what Wing Commander could kind of achieve. Because Wing Commander itself was a little bit slow because they're trying to, you know, put so much on the screen at once. So once they finally released Hover Tank 3D, didn't do very well because of the model in which they were using it to sell. They were obviously putting it into small retail stores, that kind of thing. So they decided, you know what, let's make another 3D game. We're starting to get this. We're starting to do well with it. And they ended up creating a game in which you were in the perspective of a wizard traversing a maze-like dungeon, casting spells. And it was called Catacombs 3D. Now, Miller caught word of Catacombs and loved it and requested they make a similar game for Apogee. Because remember, those two games were both for soft disk. And, you know, looking for influence, Romero remembered a game from the early 80s that was called Castle Wolfenstein that had the protagonist escaping a castle occupied by the Nazi army. So, you know, thankfully enough, though, the rights for Castle Wolfenstein were in public domain at the time. So they were able to use this without having to pay anybody any licensing rights. And Wolfenstein 3D and the first person shooter genre was realistically born at that time. Now, with Wolfenstein's popularity, it kind of came down to a few different factors. So for one, it was very immersive with the first person perspective, and it included loads of gore, which basically made it one of the edgiest games on the market at the time. Now, since the game was published through Apogee, they again decided to distribute it via the internet with a similar distribution model for Commander King, basically making word of mouth advertising much more possible. This is been dubbed the shareware model, and it would prove to be a factor that allowed this game to explode, bringing in revenues of $200,000 a month for a year and a half. So, yeah, I think they did a lot better than the first Commander game. So, this ironically, in a twist to that, it garnered the attention of Nintendo that asked them to make a less violent version for the Super Nintendo. Which removed all Nazi imagery, it removed the blood, and it changed dogs into large rats.
Because that's less disturbing.
Right, right. Shoot Nazis all you want, but the rats, or the dogs getting killed, we got to change that. Mm-hmm. So they needed to kind of follow up the success of Wolfenstein with another 3D shooter that essentially upped the ante. Thinking about what they want to make this new game, because they didn't want to make a sequel necessarily to Wolfenstein, even though Apogee itself decided that they were going to make a Wolfenstein 2, but the project eventually got abandoned, and they turned all their work into a different game that they ended up releasing. But Carmack and Romero all really wanted to create something different. And the interesting part about Carmack is that the entire time that they would create a new game, so when they created, you know, Dangerous Davy, he created a new engine for that. He improved upon the engine for Commander King. And then they would release more versions of Commander King. And Carmack would continue to make more and more engines for that. So he ended up creating a new engine of, well, for Wolfenstein and for this new game as he was working on it. So the guy was constantly just pushing the technology in order to create really, really good stuff. And they were influenced at the time by a line in the movie The Color of Money, which when asked what was in the case, it was a case that was holding Tom Cruise's pool stick. They asked him, what's in the case? And he just said, doom.
Right. I didn't know that. I didn't know that story.
Right. Super, super corny, but I love the fact that that's where it came from, is that The Color of Money was the influence for that. And actually, the theme of the game was a mixture of two other influences as well. Aliens, ironically enough, which we were talking about tonight. And that they had an ongoing Dungeons and Dragons game that featured a lot of demons to fight. So they were like, all right, let's pair these two together, because we don't want to pay licensing to Fox for Aliens, because that would take away from our profits. So let's make it futuristic, but let's make the bad guys demons, which Adrian Carmack, the art director for it, was super happy, because that meant he kind of had carte blanche to make these demons as ugly or terrifying as possible. The one thing that it included, though, for Doom was the ability to play via the internet in a mode that they call Deathmatch. Now, Deathmatch is something nowadays that's extremely common. The idea of playing across the internet in multiplayer is huge, and it didn't necessarily start with Doom, per se, but I think Doom is the reason that it's as prolific as it is now. It was the Doom kind of pushed it into that, because the Deathmatch part of the game at a point came to be the reason why a lot of people were playing it, not just for the story itself. So, you know, the addition of Deathmatch to it, the fact that the graphics were updated, the music was really intense, the characters were really well drawn, it included the gore from before when it came to Castle Wolfenstein, it ended up leapfrogging the success of Wolfenstein. And that resulted in them going independent. So they said, you know what, we're going to release this game. We know it's going to be a hit. Let's go independent. And so they created officially an id Software game, in which they released, and they had gotten familiar with how the distribution model worked over at Apogee. So they ended up using the same thing for Doom with the shareware model in order to distribute it. That's how I played it as a kid. I remember my cousin gave me a disc with the, you know, the trial version of the game on it, just with the, you know, in magic marker written on it, Doom, don't show your mom. And actually, you know, it's funny. I played the demo a lot as a kid, and then it wasn't until I got into my 20s that I actually played the whole game. So I didn't even purchase the real thing. But the hype was so big for this game that when they attempted to release the game online using the University of Wisconsin server, there were so many requests that it crashed the server moments after it went live at midnight, which University of Wisconsin was like, what the heck is this? We never expected this many hits at midnight, mind you, for our server. But obviously, they ended up getting a point to which they were able to distribute more of them. Now, Doom is often cited as being one of the most influential video games of all time. It's made the first-person shooter genre mainstream. It's a spawn, a plethora of other games that are still alive and well today. And eventually, the story of id kind of deviates from that. I mean, they made other games like Quake and a myriad of other really, really good games for the PC and console. But after Doom and really Doom 2, the company got large enough that they ended up turning into more of a corporate feel for the studio and essentially lost a bit of the gusto. John Romero got kicked out. Tim Hall left. Carmack ended up being kind of taking over and, you know, didn't have the same charisma as Romero. So staff started leaving. It was kind of a thing, but it's probably a story for another time. So maybe we'll do a part two of this, what happened after Doom. But I think the early history of this company is just a really cool example about maybe the idea of courage. I think that, you know, in summation, that term courage comes to mind a lot when you think about the guys of id. You know, they never stopped reinventing themselves and kind of used their passion to help fuel their success. So kudos to you, id. Without you, I probably would have had a more boring childhood. So thank you guys.
We might not even have the genre FPS.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, that's a huge deal. And Carmack is responsible for a lot of the early foundations and programming workarounds, clever tricks like not rendering everything that's not seen that are still used today. That sort of, I mean, a lot of his stuff would be outdated now. But again, you wouldn't have the modern game engines today if it wasn't for Carmack. So they're a big deal.
For sure.
Definitely.
So I wanted to say to you guys, thank you for attending today's lesson. By the way, huge thanks to machinima.com for the information for today's lesson. Just a reminder, if you have ideas for stories you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com, and we might feature your suggestion. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to episode 26 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, the Elitist Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode, as well as JNL Games for sponsoring our giveaway. Don't forget to check out their links in the show note. Also, thank you, Cade Call of the Gaming Memories Podcast, for filling in for us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no definitely. Thank you so much.
I had a grand old time.
That's great to hear.
Excellent.
Yes. So his links will be available in the show notes. So when you're done listening here, be sure to head over and check him out, especially on his TikTok. It's awesome. So if you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. You can visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And also join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really love your feedback. While you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast.
We're so close to the end. You can do it.
So close. Podcast platform of choice. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Adios.
Best friends.
Yep. Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.